This is the reading from Heart Earth to the King County Library System employees.
Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you, Bill and Betty, for including me in this gathering today. Betty Richardson and I figured we could safely assume you've heard quite a bit about libraries by this point of the day. Maybe you wouldn't mind hearing somebody else at work. Somebody has to think up the Kugel Mass episodes of the world, right? A book manuscript such as I'm going to read to you from in this bit of story time, a book manuscript is the writer at work, and so on the one hand, these opening scenes of what will be a book, not quite completed, as Linda said here, but will be a book in 1993. These scenes are not as polished as I hope they will be. On the other hand, this is the world premiere. What you're going to hear is the beginning of a remembering, a memoir, a prequel, that takes place before my book, This House of Sky. Somewhere in Sky, I wrote that memory is the near neighborhood of dream. And this new book seems to want to dance itself along those brain wall edges. Two quick things to tell you before letting the words talk for themselves. The book begins with an excerpt from an actual letter, and you'll hear occasionally in the reading the word ALT, A-U-L-T. It's the name of a World War II warship, a destroyer in the South Pacific. The book opens with a postmark, Phoenix, Arizona, February 4, 1945. Dear Wally, I shouldn't even be writing you my troubles, but I have to spill over to someone. I'd just like to have you around so I could put my head on your shoulder and cry. It's going on 1 o'clock, and we haven't had dinner yet. Charlie is resting. I thought the rest would do him more good than eating. Ivan is out in the backyard building roads. He had a foxhole dug to bury a cow in. In that last winter of the war, she knew to use point-blank ink. Nothing's ever crossed out, never a PS. The heart-quick lines, still as distinct as the day of the postmark. Her fountain pen instinctively refusing the fate of time. Among the little I have had of her is that pen. Incised into the demure barrel of it, my father must have birthdayed her a couple of weeks' worth of his cowhand wages in this gesture, rests her maiden name. Readily enough, then, I can make out the hand at the page, the swift scritch of her letters racing down onto paper for Wally, someone, to know. But all else of her, this woman there earmarking a war-striped airmail envelope with the return address of Mrs. Charles Doig, until now has been only farthest childscapes, half-rememberings thinned by so many years since. I had given up ever trying to uncurtain my mother. Now, her pages begin her. My hat is still over to someone. Upward from her held pen, at last, she is back again. Aluminum and Arizona in their wartime tryst produced Alzona Park. The defense workers' housing project, which had been feeling my shovel ever since my parents and I landed there. I knew, with all the mania of a five-year-old, that the project's barren backyards necessitated my toy truck roads strafing, bombing. World War II had a lot of destruction to be played at yet. I was lonesome for my foxhole, though. By a turn of events, you just couldn't foresee in desert warfare. It had been put out of service by rain. My mother made me fill the dirt back into the brimming crater, lest somebody underestimate it as a puddle go in up to the neck. Spies, saboteurs, the kind of subversive traffic you get in backyards, seemed to me to deserve precisely such a dunk. But my mother stood firm on foxholelessness. I suppose she was concerned about our Alzonan barracks neighbors, who, I could have reasoned with her, were all the more justification for a foxhole. Hunker in there, peeking over the earth rim, just see what they turned into. Housewife snipers in the 200 building be fought off with a pretend rifle. The long 300 building, a sudden Japanese battleship. The foxhole now needing to be a gun battery on the destroyer USS Ault, blazing away at those fiends, threatening the Iwo Jima beachhead, holding them off until down in the torpedo room, Wally. February 17, 1986. Four fingers of flame thrust toward the snowfields of Mount Baldy and extinguished into echo. Stiffly working their rifle bolts to reload, the veterans of foreign wars, honor guard, aims and lets fire again, the combined muzzle flash flexing bright, another instant. Then a last volley, and the honor guard dissolves into World War II oldsters, clutching at their campaign caps in the cemetery wind. Ceremonially, Wally Ringer's chapter of life was now over that wind-ridden Montana afternoon. But in the family plot of time, not nearly done with. Can that be what this brother of my mother secretly had in mind with the letters? Sensing the carrying power of that ink as a way to go on? That by making me heir to the lost side of my past, to my mother's own communiques of time and place doing to her what they did, he would find the kind of lastingness too? At the moment, I only knew I was the most grudging of pallbearers, gritting against the shiver more than windborne, of having come back where I promised myself not to, to where all the compartments of my earliest self rode together on me, nephew, son, grandson, native of this valley, economic refugee from it, ranch kid, town nomad, sourpuss half-orphan, ecstatic half-orphan, chambered as a goddamn nautilus. Three times before, I watched the saga of my family echo into the earth here, and in the glide of years since, convinced myself I was safely done with Montana burials. Those voices of the heart held no more to tell, I thought. Wally's in particular, I no longer gave ear to, for we had ended up somewhere between quibble and quarrel forever, his Quicksilver uncle and I. But before any of this, before the gnarl in our family history that brought me back and back to that wintry cemetery, he was a sailor on the Ault. I am feeling pretty good, much better than any time so far since I've been down here, my mother's hand again. Charlie is the one that isn't well. His stomach bothers him all the time. He is so thin. A few of the letters in the packet duffled home from the Pacific are blurry from water stain. But this first one by my mother to her sailor brother is all too clear that we have traded predicament in Montana for predicament in Arizona. My parents and my father's sister Anna and her husband Joe and the five-year-old dirt mover that was me had thrown all we had into a Ford coupe and pinballed our way down through the West 1,000 miles ration books, straining from gas station to gas station along old US 89, me, most of the time, intrepidly shelved crosswise in the rear window, until we rolled to a halt in Phoenix the night before Thanksgiving of 1944. The next Monday, my father and Joe latched on as Aluminum Company of America factory hands, and our great sunward swerve settled into Alzona Park orbit. In Unit 119B, the five of us crammed in, Anna and Joe to stay on with my mother and father and me for only the first 3 months of this Arizona pilgrimage. Bare wood floors, round composition board walls and ceiling, cubicle rooms with windows howlingly curtainless till my mother couldn't stand it any longer and hung some dime store chintz, along with 5,500 other Arizonans, we were war loyally putting up with packing crate decor. But pulling in money, hand over fist, my father and Joe drawing more than a dollar an hour at the aluminum plant. An hour for guys who had been lucky to see $50 a month in Montana ranch work. Surely this, the state of Arizona, humming and buzzing with defense plants and military bases installed for the war, this was the craved new world, the shores of Social Security and the sugar trees of overtime. True, the product of defense work wasn't as indubitable as a sheep or cow. Aluminum screeched through the cutting area where Dad and Joe worked, and a half mile of factory later was shunted out as bomber wings. But all in between was secrecy. For the 119B batch of us to try to figure out the bomber factory alchemy, my father smuggled out down his pant leg a what's-it from the wing plant. I remember the thing as about the size of the business end of a branding iron, the approximate shape of a flying V, pale as ice, almost weightless, so light to hold it was a little spooky. "Hey, you can't tell me what this is," Dad announced as he plunked it down to wow my mother and Anna and me, and for that matter, Joe. Actually, he had no more idea than any of the rest of us what the mystifying gizmo was. But it must have done something supportive of the wing of a B-29 bomber. Like light, time is both particle and wave. Even as that far winter of our lives traced itself as a single Arizona amplitude of season along the collective dateline of memory, simultaneously it was stippling all through us in instants distinct as sparks. Out of those particles, those waves, this deliberate dream. The heavy rain that Christmas Eve was contradicting my mother's notion of what both Christmas and Phoenix ought to be. She was trying to work the move to death, baking an army of cookies and rapidly wrapping Anna and Joe's presents, film kerchiefs for her, cigarettes for him, while they were out visiting with friends they knew from Montana. And of course, the weather was keeping me inside, which was to say, in her hair. Until she put me to crayoning a festive message to my grandmother. I came up with, "Merry Christmas, Grandma!" in the countless fonts of my printed handwriting, and devoted the rest of the page to dive bombing, blowing up everything in sight. Right on time, the outside door rattled open, but my father's inevitable approximate whistling of, "The squalls along the Yukon," doesn't follow him. Instead, my father, all of a sudden, is in the kitchen with us, checking us over with a careful look. Puts his lunchbox down, begins the excitement casually. "Did you hear? I have only one fact in me, that it's about to be Christmas, and my mother's got two, that it's about to be Christmas, and we are an interplanetary distance from anybody and anywhere we know. And so, my father's news is fresh. He's pried it out of a gate guard at the aluminum plant. The guards, this holiday night, giving everybody a going over when the shifts changed, inspecting security badges, passing people through with slow single file. A whole hell of a bunch of German prisoners got away, with my father's report. They're watching for the buggers everywhere, including now apartment 119B. As my eyes and my mother's simultaneously go big at my father's bulletin. The great breakout at Papago Park prisoner of war camp near Phoenix had been engineered by U-boat men, tunnel visioned in the most effective sense. Somehow they dug through a couple of feet of hard pan a day for the past 3 months. And tonight, 25 of them have moled out to freedom under the cover of ruckus set up by their comrades. "Oh, Charlie," says my mother, simply in commentary of German POWs added to the rest of the deluge out there. Meanwhile, I am scared, flabbergasted, and inspired. A tunnel, a foxhole is nothing compared to that. Tomorrow will not be too soon for me to begin my sandhog future under Arizona Park. Puns at the door of Phoenix don't faze my father. He kids my mother about the Glums and Zettles on her side of the family. "Just remember, Bernita, the MPs come around here. You're not related to those sauerkraut cousins of yours back in Wisconsin." What? What? I've done my teething on the war. Could never remember when the grown-ups were not invading against the Japs and the Krauts and so on. And now, Mama, are we Germans? My mother shoots my father up. "Now look what you started, look." "We're pedigreed Scotch," he assures me. But can't help adding, "Even you and Mama, you both caught it from me." I am determined to get this matter of breed straight. "How did we catch it?" My father gives the handsome grin off their wedding photograph. "It got pretty contagious there for a while." Naturally, I want to follow up on that, but my mother, business to do with cookies and wrapping paper, pokes another look at my father. "Are you about done stirring him up, Charlie?" "I guess maybe so," he acknowledges as he studies her. "Now what can I do about you?" All at once, he says, so soberly it breaks on the air as a kind of plea. "Merry Christmas, Bernita." Realization lifts her upper lip in the middle, her index of surprise. She honestly hasn't known how much her mood has been showing. She's at a loss. "It's just," she hunches her shoulders a little, smallest shrug, but on it rides all the distances of this Christmas. Bounce like dice against the war's longitudes and latitudes. Wally is steaming into the harbor at Eniwetok in the far Pacific. My grandmother and grandfather have separated. She's cooking on some ranch in Montana, and he is in parts unknown. My army Uncle Paul is in Australia. Here we are in aluminized Arizonan Alzona. This sunward leap of ours had been my father's doing for my mother's sake. More and more spooked by her asthma battles and the isolation of the Montana ranch, he flung the place away, piloted us out of Montana on war ball tires, waning ration books. He has desperately done what he thought there was to do, made the move to Arizona for the sake of health, for her sake. But he can see the great journey unraveling here on the snag of Christmas, homesickness, out of placeness. And now he is looking the plea to her, everything gathered in his eyes, pulling the square lines of his face tight. She tells him all the truth she has at the moment. "I'll try to get over this, Charlie." She takes a breath, not an asthma gas, but just fuel for what she wants to get across to him about her isolation amid a city full of strangers in war. how she misses everything about Montana there is to miss. It's going to take some trying, she lets him know. Invisible in plain sight at the kitchen table. Crayon combat forgotten on the tablet paper in front of me. I watch back and forth at these gods of my world in their confusion. At last, my father nods to my mother and says, as though something has been settled, "That's all we can any of us do, Bertha, is try." The escaped Germans do not devour us in our Christmas Eve beds. Hightailing it to non-belligerent Mexico is more what they had in mind. And so we climb out to the day itself and its presence, up out of the fiber of that boy who became me. Can't my gift prospect be pretty readily dreamed? Tricycle? Toy truck? Wicked new shovel? No. Beyond any of those, threadbare Alzona Park produced an actual item more magical than imagined ones can ever be. From out beyond the world's possibilities, I have been given for Christmas the alt. Blessed conspiracy of Wally and my mother, this. He by sending, and she by sneaking the Christmas gift wrapping onto this toy replica of his ship. The replica does not say it, really, because my alt was tubby, basic, a flat iron-sized vessel with a block of superstructure and a single droll dowel of cannon poking out. More like a Civil War ironclad than anything actually esteemed in the United States Navy in 1944. But painted a perfect navy gravy gray, there on the bow, in thrilling authentication, the black lettering SS alt. Wally would have had to go to the dictionary in one of your libraries for a avuncular, but he managed to give me a most benevolently uncle-like worship. Naturally, the grown-ups have wasted Christmas on each other by giving dry old functional things back and forth. And so, while Anna and Joe and Dan and even my mother try to have what they think is a good time, my alt and I voyage Unit 119B all that day, past Gibraltar's chair legs, through the straits of doorways and the bays of beds. We make frequent weather reconnaissances to a window, for my mother has promised that if the rain ever stops, we can breast the moistures of Arizona outside. All the while, all this holiday, although I am not to know so until he wills the packet of letters to me, each dutifully folded back into its envelope, edged with World War II airmail emblazonments. 42 years later, my parents and I and Arizona are on Wally's mind. With my gift ship came his letter to my mother, asking whether he would have any prospects where we are in Arizona after the war. Are there flour mills and feed stores where we might get a trucking job? Through us, like a signal tremor along a web, Phoenix, the metropolitan future, is making itself felt even into the far Pacific. You can feel the growth just gathering. It undoubtedly is what my mother has been feeling. The post-war time coming, when you can throw a doorknob on this Sunbelt desert and a dozen houses would start. Yet, my mother, glad as she would have been to have him on hand in our future, does not sing back to her brother what he wants to hear. As she was with my father, she will be carefully honest as she can with Wally, writing for him that she really can't be sure of his prospects to be here where I am dreamily alting, where my father has brought our hopes. She will write the future she sees from Phoenix with point-blank neutrality.
Thank you.